Storyland, written by Catherine McKinnon and read by Grant Cartwright and Uli Bervais. '1796. My oar stabs the side of the Reliance. We push Tom Thumb away from the ship. Venus is out, but the sky is still light. Lieutenant Flinders takes the helm. Mr. Bass and I row until we are clear of the ships docked at Sydney Cove, and then we boat the oars and hoist sail. Tom Thumb's sail snaps at the breeze, and air-filled, we bounce across the water. To dare is to do, Mr. Bass shouts our motto. To dare is to do, the lieutenant and I reply as if we are one. It is Thursday, the 24th of March, the year 1796. This day we have embarked on our second Tom Thumb sail. Mr. Bass and Lieutenant Flinders are charged with locating the mouth of the river that Henry Hacking, a ship pilot who likes to hunt, has discovered inland. Hacking has guessed the mouth to be south of Botany Bay, near Cape Banks. Mr. Bass says that if we find that river, and it is deep enough to take large vessels, then our names will be shiny buttons on English coats. Seawater sprays across the gunwale. It is the enchanted hour, where blue water glows, and the rocky shores and sandy beaches have a yellowish gleam. On the eastern side of the cove, I spy the governor's stone house. Near it, the farmed gardens. On the western side is the hospital, where my friend, Nah, will be sweeping floors. Around the cove, dirt paths snake by houses made of brick, mud, wattle, and post, and limed inside and out. Beyond the settlement, it is all forest. The trees have rare and fanciful roots that rise high above the ground. At each step, there are fallen trunks, slumped sideways like drunken sailors, or prostrate on the ground. Others that are lightning splintered or perished. The foliage is silver tinged and evergreen. In this land, nature is upended. Birds sing through the night, animals hunt and forage in moonlight. Dribbling through the trees and over mudflats, and dividing east of the cove from west, is the Tank Stream. Once it was a pure stream, but now it is fouled by pig dung, food scraps, and more, so that our small colony is desperate for clean water. The governor hopes that the river we seek may provide new areas to settle. According to Mr. Bass, therein lies the importance of our task. We sail on past stony Pinchgut Island. A man stands on the shore. I see a hand rise to wave. Or is it a trick of the eye? Only the wicked are left there. No one on Garden Island. Behind us, the ships moored in the harbour soon disappear. Larboard and starboard is only darkened forest. Indian fires glimmer between the jungle of skeleton trees. Our first Tom Thumb, owned by Mr. Bass and friends, was taken to Timor on the Nautilus and did not return. The colony's boat builder, good Mr. Payne, Clinker, built a new Thumb, with steamed frames of spotted gum, red cedar planks, and polished copper fittings. We are kitted with a mast of flooded gum, a linen lug sail, a sweep sail, and well-crafted oars. Less than 12 foot, so a small boat to sail in. There is no anchor spare in the colony, so our anchor is a lump of rock that the sea has speared a hole through, and under Mr. Bass's instruction, I have threaded it with thick rope. We have only two muskets to contest pirates or cannibals. Supplies for 10 days, no more, and the danger is great. The governor himself tried to dissuade us from the journey. We are more than willing, Lieutenant Flinders said. Good fate does not side with every explorer, the governor warned. We are confident, Mr. Bass assured him. Still the governor resisted.